Opening statements began today in Boise in the murder and conspiracy trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. She's charged in the deaths of two of her children. Portland-based journalist and author Leah Sottle has written a book about the case called When the Moon Turns to Blood. She sat down with our Troy Oppie. Let's take a listen to their extended
interview. Having done all the research for your book prior to trial, your book is published now, obviously. That's also indicative of how long this process has taken. What are you watching for as the trial gets underway? How are you digesting all of this?
It's really hard to plan. This is going to be an 8-week trial, could be as long as 10 weeks. And I think that that's one real tragedy that I'm realizing is that the cutbacks in journalism are really affecting trials like this. There's a lot of national interest in this case. And even some of the reporters who've been on it since the very beginning are only going to be here for a couple of weeks. So, East Idaho News' Nate Eaton is here every day of the trial, and he's a fantastic reporter and has been on it since the very, very beginning. So, you know, I'm not the daily reporter. I'm a magazine reporter, and I'm somebody who wrote a book about this case. And so what's interesting to me at this point is in jury selection, we're hearing about who the people are that are going to essentially decide Lori Vallow's fate. And it's very interesting to hear how prosecutors and defense are asking questions. And one big major hurdle that they're needing to get over is how much pretrial media there's been on this case, that even people who haven't heard a whole lot about it know something about it. And that's pretty notable because this case has moved 4 hours west and is, 8 County is so much more populous than Madison County and Fremont County. And there's still, sometimes these jury pools are coming through and only 2-3 people are getting through. So I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting to hear about, sort of the broader implications of this case, that there are jurors who have children, and you hear a lot of questions about whether or not they're going to be able to be fair jurors on a case that involves some pretty graphic autopsy photos and things like that. So I'm definitely not the reporter. There's a lot of true crime interest in this case where people want to know what Lori Vallow's hair looks like and what shirt she's wearing. I'm not that person. I'm more interested in the kind of wider cultural implications that this case is taking place inside of.
The circumstances of this case are obviously horrible. And I wonder what sticks out to you about the reasons why it has captured the national attention the way that it has?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I think that America has a longtime fascination with fallen, beautiful women. It's something I talk about in my book a little bit. Think about the Casey Anthony case or someone like Anna Nicole Smith. And I think that Lori Vallow, checks a lot of those boxes, the cheerleader, the all-American mom, the beauty queen, and things like that. But I think that what I have focused on, when I'm not working on this case for the past almost decade, I've been writing about political and religious extremism in the Western United States. And this is a case that I think what a lot of people miss is that, it's being covered like this true crime murder case. And it is that. But it is also, to me, what happens when extremist talking points and end times rhetoric trickles down into the mainstream, because there's so much evidence that, I don't know if it'll be presented in this case, but these are things that I've found in my own reporting, that Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell really existed at the fringes, the far right fringes of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that they had kind of were able to meet because of this ecosystem of extremism that exists there. You've got your survivalists and your end times preppers, but people who also think we're going to be the chosen ones when the end comes, the end, prophesied in the book of Revelation. So this is about that. And that culture is, at a distance, is very fascinating. It's a culture that's been around within Mormonism in the Mountain West and Idaho and Utah specifically for quite some time. I think what's really scary and sad about this case is that it shows when people believe fervently in these extreme ideologies, they may be willing to commit violence in the name of those things.
In your reporting, how have you found other members of the Latter-day Saints reacting to the belief system that the Daybells adhered to?
Oh, I mean, to a T, everyone who is a mainstream Mormon is like, this is not what we're about. You know, there's your listeners may know that Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow talked about things like zombies being a part of their religion. You know, I think anybody can that's within Mormonism can laugh at that and say there's no zombies within our faith. But I think that what they do see is something that's familiar in terms of this sort of paranoia that does exist within the church. You know, not every Mormon who has prepper stores is an extremist, but, you know, of course not. But there are people within the faith that have existed within the faith for quite some time that take those things beyond the nth degree into these kind of really extreme paranoid zones.
Is there a lesson that you think people should be taking away as a light is going to be shined on this particular brand of religious extremism, not necessarily just tied to the Mormon church, but any religious extremism? What should people be taking away as this aspect of the trial and of the lifestyle is discussed?
Well, I think right now it's a little early to know how much religious belief is going to be a part of the trial. I think we can presume that it will be a big part of it, but we're right now in that early jury selection stage, so religion hasn't come up a lot. But I think that when people look at this case, you know, it is hard. It's a nasty set of circumstances that have allowed Lori Vallow to get to where she is. But I think that in looking at kind of into this abyss, we can kind of all take away the real sobering truth of when extremism, when extreme ideas are so out there, they're so pervasive, they're on social media, they really do trickle down to the kind of suburban mom in yoga pants that might, you know, they're mainstreaming. And they, I think that's one thing that is really kind of sad and scary about Lori Vallow in particular, is that by all means, she was this very normal person that really indulged in the last few years before she ended up in jail in this real extreme subculture that was, you know, that people knew was around, but kind of didn't want to talk about, kind of didn't want to look at. And I think we've got to look at these things and we've got to figure out ways to dismantle those systems.
You first started reporting on extremism in the West, chronicling the standoff at Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in 2016. What did you discover about reporting on that led you now to want to cover Chad and Lori Daybell?
You know, if I hadn't reported on what happened with the Bundys and the Malheur standoff, I never would have gotten to the Vallow case. And I think that's what surprises a lot of people, is they're, you know, think of me as an investigative journalist and think, well, why would you dive into this true crime case? What I learned from my interviews, from my first person interviews with the Bundys, was that standoff and the previous standoff at Bundy Ranch in Nevada, those were motivated by their religious beliefs, that they really felt that they had to do those things because of what they believed. And they woke me up to a lot of kind of fringe, you know, quote unquote prophecies, because they're not accepted by the church, that exist within Mormonism, that I thought at the time, you know, this is so weird, this is so out there, you know, the Bundys are the only people who think this kind of thing. That all culminated in a podcast and story series that I made called Bundyville. And after that came out, I was contacted by a lot of people in Idaho and Utah who said, I don't think that you realize how much more mainstream these things are than you think. And so when the Vallow Daybell case started and people were talking about these kind of quote unquote cult-like beliefs that they had, you know, it kind of sent up my radar as a reporter thinking, well, do they believe the same things that the Bundys believe? And it turned out, you know, I was pretty quickly able to figure out that at least with Chad Daybell, that was true, with Lori Vallow's husband. So yeah, it is pretty interesting that, you know, what started as a public land story in the West and why people would take up arms against the government turned into really understanding kind of all the tentacles of that movement.
We're speaking with Leah Satilli, reporter and author of a book on Lori Vallow Daybell and Chad Daybell called When the Moon Turns to Blood. I do wonder, having been deep in this project for so many years, and I don't want to trivialize the seriousness of the proceedings here, but what is it like to finally see this reach the trial stage?
We have waited for over 3 years for this trial to begin, for some kind of semblance of justice to happen for the victims in this case. You know, and I've covered conspiracy trials in the past, specifically with the Bundys, and you know, those are really precarious cases. So to see how the prosecution and the defense is talking about conspiracy and that kind of things. I mean, it's like I say, at a distance, like, this is all very exciting, and it's very, you know, I think that it is really kind of tragic that it has taken so long for the victims in this case to have their day in court. So that in itself is exciting, to see those wheels of justice continue turning.
And beyond some of these obvious answers, the why and the how, what are you most intrigued by learning as this trial proceeds over the next 2+ months?
I think that, you know, there's so much that is known about this case, but there's all this kind of space that needs to be filled in. So, you know, when the children were killed, and maybe what happened to them and what led to that happening. I think that one thing that remains a point of major interest for a lot of watchers of this case is what exactly happened to Tammy Daybell, Chad Daybell's wife of 29 years. She was buried in Utah and exhumed, and an autopsy was done. And the results of that autopsy have been very closely guarded. So, you know, that's going to come out in this case. And I think that, you know, for me as an extremism reporter, like, I'm looking for that connective tissue that shows, you know, not a connection to really any groups or anything like that, but just like a connection to these ideas that are in the wind, because I think it can be really instructive to people who are maybe on the fence about how real extremism in America, in the West, in Idaho is. And this might be, you know, one of those cases where we can say, you know, this is how the development of an extremist mindset happens, and here's what those consequences can be.
That was our All Things Considered host, Troy Oppie, speaking with writer Lee Sottle, who wrote the book When the Moon Turns to Blood. Opening statements began in Boise today in Lori Vallow Daybell's trial, who's accused in the deaths of two of her children and her husband's ex-wife. The trial could take up to 8 weeks. Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
What if the greatest tragedy of your life was just covered up?
I have never seen anything like that before or after.
This is the story of the worst marine-on-marine friendly fire in modern history, a story kept from the public.
It's like, what did y'all have to hide?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast in its latest series, Taking Cover.